Okay. Before we have our quiet time, let's all get on the same page. If you're in the Sparkly Book, it's page 344, the last paragraph. If you're in the second edition, it's page 298, paragraph 9. If you're reading from the first edition, it's page 277, the last paragraph. If you're reading from the JCIM, it's page 144, the sixth full paragraph. And if you're reading from the CIMS edition, it's page 289, paragraph 69. Okay, let's take a few moments to be quiet together. Okay. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. We've been talking for a few weeks about not just the value of not thinking for yourself, but the fact that you really don't have a capacity to think for yourself or on your own. I want to talk a little bit tonight about the great need not to let other people do your thinking for you. I want to suggest to you that it's not a wise idea to run to your television set and find out how the world is thinking, or how your government is thinking, or worse, how the pundits are thinking. Because their job is to make the most out of indefiniteness, to make the most out of lack of conclusions, to create interesting discussion about indecisiveness, and to get you to become excited or fearful about possibilities, about likelihoods, all of which they can't guarantee or even prove. But they have a way of talking that gets your attention. Now, you tune into our Sunday night fireside chats, or you listen during the week to the recording, and you learn about not pretending to think for yourself, and you learn about the value of doing whatever it takes to listen and actually hear. And that puts your attention in a direction very different from where the pundits would direct your attention, or where the government would direct your attention. And you begin to close your eyes, so to speak. Back off from the news and find your peace and move out of the excitement and the reactiveness so that you might find your peace and do the very thing which will allow a sudden shift of perception to occur, which, of course, is called a miracle, which is what all of you really want. You all know that when you turn on the news on the TV, you're not going to be triggered into a miracle, especially at the present time. And you know that those who are able to put thoughts together in an interesting and scary way will do so and engage your attention and cause you to, what? Decide that the Holy Spirit isn't sufficient to the need, that that which is nothing more than your right mind is not sufficient to the need, and that if you will watch the newscasts or listen to the pundits, they will act as a vigorous jump start to your very own thinking. Right? And in a way, you won't have to take credit for it. Well, they made me do it. They made me do it. Well, you heard what they said. How could I not react? How could I not think? How could I not take what they said and run with it? Exactly. How could you not do that? But why did you turn the television on in the first place? It would be like Paul getting up every morning and running to the computer to check out the gathering place on the foundation's website to see what's going on, instead of waking up and sitting right there on the edge of his bed and say, "Good morning, Raj. What's the order of the day today? What's on the Father's agenda? Where do I need to be giving my attention?" You see? You have in front of you a wonderful opportunity. It doesn't matter whether you're in the United States or in some other country, because everyone's involved here. Talk about unity. Talking about the need for unity. Hey, everyone, wake up. It's already a unity. If there's a problem in the U.S. economy, there's a problem in the English economy, or the Japanese economy, or the Chinese economy. If there's a problem in China, it's a problem in the United States. It's already one. Now, you want to know what governs things? Not governments. All the individualities. All the individualities. Oh, but I don't have any power. I don't have any power, and look what's happening, and I'm going to be even more powerless. Well, are you turning on the TV? Are you turning on the dignified news? Or are you turning on the news that twists and binds and torques things for entertainment value? Are you going to turn your attention where nothing but confusion can come forth or be magnified in you? And by your turning on that channel, are you going to provide statistics that prove to that network or that channel that what they're doing is getting your attention, and therefore, since advertisers will pay to have your attention, they will keep doing what you're tuning in to listen to? Don't tell me you don't have power, and don't fool yourself into thinking you're powerless. You stop listening to those who magnify indefiniteness, who magnify suppositions, and do it in a way that excites you with fear. Don't tune into those channels, and the statistics will show the advertisers that this is not a channel or an activity to pour their money into, and those channels will stop. You know, the saying is, one with God is a majority. It is. It's not just a platitude, and it always has been the truth. You've always had the power to listen for the Father's voice, and as a result of listening and hearing, being the expression of the Father, in which all of the power and perfection and harmony and order that the Father is finds expression, quote, in the world. Now, it doesn't matter how many people are afraid right now. It doesn't matter how many times the news tells you that the stock market is reacting in this way or reacting in that way, showing a general loss of faith in the population, in those investors, blah, 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 and telling you in so many words that therefore, because those with the money are afraid, you need to be afraid. And because they're behaving in an erratic way rather than an orderly way, you need to be willing to become erratic and disorderly. And think erratic and disorderly thoughts that were jump-started by the very fact that you turned the GD television on, or picked up the newspaper and read what wasn't written from a grounded place of intelligence, where what was coming forth was guided by the Holy Spirit, that which was nothing more than the right mind of the person writing the article, who therefore had the capacity to write an article that expressed intelligence that was relieving and gave guidance, you might say, for how to behave in a way that causes the fear to subside. Now, we've been talking about the value of abandoning thinking for quite a few weeks. And all of you have, to one degree or another, listened to what I've said and have tried, to one degree or another, to put it into practice. But you have, to some degree, incapacitated the Holy Spirit by assuming that you still had some capacity to cope with things yourself. Well, we can take some negative, we can get some negative learning out of what's happening. During the last few weeks, with the economic situation and the election in the United States, you have seemed to have justification for slipping into your supposed capacity to think. And you have been frightening yourselves unmercifully. No, it isn't the news that's been frightening you. It's been you that has been frightening you by choosing to think, even though the news jump-started it. Now that you're really scared, how valuable is it to you to imagine that you want to continue to think and that you want to continue to let the media jumpstart your thinking? You're simply faced with, well, not just a wonderful opportunity, but you're faced with an actual demand to stop thinking. If you want to find out what the news is, find it in print somewhere. Don't listen to people with their voices and their emotions that they add and the inflections they put to the words they're saying. Find good, clear journalism in print so that you can read with as little emotion attached to it as possible, what the calls for love are. What are the corrections that are needed? You need to be able to be aware of them, but you just don't need to become aware of them through pundits and through those who have an agenda aside from giving you the news, their agenda being to provide you with the news in a way that causes you to keep tuning to their station because that's what generates income for the station and keeps them on the air. Okay? Find news in print that's well written and as unbiased as possible, and then don't read the printed word all day. Get the picture so that you can then set the source of the news down and become still without thinking. And in the quietness in you, ask Father or Holy Spirit or my guide, what needs to be known here? People are frightened because they're ignorant. I could be frightened because I'm ignorant, but I don't want to be ignorant, and I do want to be the place where the truth that transforms and heals can come through. Why? So that you can be at peace? No, that's not good enough. The reason you're asking is so that you can be the place where that which puts your brother at peace can come through, because you care about your brother, because it is in loving your brother that you remember God, and you are blessed. What you give, you get to keep. Go to the place where the good news awaits you so that you might take the good news to your brother or your sister. That's your job. That's your job all the time. But maybe under the circumstances, you have a situation that causes the valuableness of it to be more apparent to you, so that you're less inclined to think for yourself or put yourself in a position where your thinking gets jump-started by someone else's thinking. You must be very wise right now, because there are so many who are more than happy to tell you how to think and how to feel. And most of the time, you will be encouraged to feel a certain way, not because it will heal you, but because it will be a benefit for those who are providing you with the information. We're going to go into the book, and I'm going to back up just a bit, a few sentences. It is only because you think that you can run some little part or deal with certain aspects of your lives alone, without help, in other words, that the guidance of the Holy Spirit is limited. Not that his power is limited, but by virtue of your not giving your full attention there, you make what you receive limited. Thus would you make him, the Holy Spirit, undependable, and use this fancied, imagined, undependability as an excuse for keeping certain dark lessons from him, and by so limiting the guidance that you would accept, you are unable to depend on miracles to answer all your problems for you. Now, you see, that's the point. You want to be able to depend on miracles to answer all your problems for you. Why? Because that's your birthright. Because that's the way things actually work. Do you think that what the Holy Spirit would have you give, he would withhold from you? Well, if you think about it for a minute, for the last couple of weeks, with all that's been going on, very little of your attention has been given to what you might give. It has been rather what you might get in terms of protection and dependability and stability and invulnerability. But you're not looking to the place where invulnerability can come forth. Where invulnerability and everything you need comes forth is the act of giving. Divine love always has met and always will meet every human need. Now, I would encourage all of you to back off from your pretentious, egotistical definitions of life and how it ought to work and how people ought to behave and whether or not people's experience is a result of their very own thinking, that they've created it for themselves. And therefore, if they've created it for yourself, who are you to interfere? Who are you to have a different point of view or to assert anything or to give anything that might change the status quo? Because after all, since they created their circumstance for themselves, they're the only ones who can uncreate it for themselves, and therefore you should mind your own business. Man, with that attitude, the consciousness of need will disappear in you. Now, that would be the worst thing that could happen. To lose the consciousness of need would be to become inhuman and incapable of expressing love. Now, at times like these, you need to be willing to look not toward your own best interest and not spending all of your energy fearing the loss of your best interest, but rather, under the circumstances, what does my brother need? What does your brother need? He needs peace. He needs encouragement. He needs solace. He needs warmth. He needs pitiful patience while he's in the middle of his fear. And he needs whatever enlightenment might help move him out of his conviction that he has justification for great fear and worry. Well, you say, well, hell, that's what I need. And you want me to ignore that and help my brother? Why don't you tell me to go find a brother to help me? Because that's not the way it works. Do you think that what the Holy Spirit would have you give, he would withhold from you? No. So if you want it, you better give it. Whatever it is you're being encouraged to fear these days, did you bring it on yourself? Does it even matter? No, it doesn't matter. Because your freedom from it, your release from it, your relief is a legitimate expectation, and one that all of your brothers and sisters should be helping you experience, and which you should be helping your brothers and sisters experience. But you're not going to hear what it is that will do that by listening to the idiocy that is being expressed through the media. So choose your teachers. I know it's fun to get self-righteous and angry, to sneer at the political candidates, to tear them down, to find flaws with them, and hope that you will find something there that will inspire you. But is that your function? Is it your task to look into your brother's eyes and find their flaws and belittle them and berate them? No. So you've got to stop it. And as I said, this is a wonderful time for you to put into practice what we've been talking about. Now the thing is that if you will put it into practice, you're going to find your threshold of fear lowering. You're going to find your peace increasing. You're going to find your capacity to be clear-headed. Mind you, I didn't say clear, being able to think clearly, but your capacity to be clear-headed will grow, increase. And your capacity to understand things in a larger picture with clarity will occur without a thought being thought. And you will be a presence that will put your neighbor at ease. If for no other reason than that your neighbor is standing next to someone who at the moment doesn't happen to be strung up, intense, in great fear, and therefore maybe your neighbor doesn't have to be either, because he knows you're not crazy. Now, you have no problems which he, the Holy Spirit, cannot solve by offering you a miracle, a sudden shift of perception. Miracles are for you, and every fear or pain or trial, and of the things going on in the last few weeks, which ones fit into which of those categories? And every fear or pain or trial you have has been undone. Wait a minute. That's not what the pundits said. What do you mean? It's been undone. The disaster just happened. The collapse just happened. Whoa, you're thinking. Who said it just happened? Oh, the TV did. Oh, the banking system did. Oh, the government did. Oh, the bank just said no, they wouldn't extend me the loan. It just happened. What do you mean? It has been undone. I'm going to tell you something. Neighborhoods very often develop what are called neighborhood associations. And the neighborhood elects officers to represent them so that they as a neighborhood can have some control and order in their neighborhood by mutual agreement. Well, it's the same thing in orphanages. Orphanages have their own orphanage association, and all the members of the orphanage elect their officers, and the officers have meetings and represent the constituents of the orphanage. And you could liken the orphanage to countries, if you wish, and it wouldn't be too far off. And the orphanage association would be the government, apparently representing the people, the constituents of the orphanage. And you know what? The neighborhood association, or the association in the orphanage, has weekly meetings, and the members of the board, on their own very often, decide what are to be called issues and what are to be dealt with. And in the week before the weekly meeting, they sort of infiltrate the rest of the orphanage and they get everybody, you know, livened up about the issues and try to get them to be willing and ready to vote for what the important answer would be. And you know what? When you've lived in an orphanage and dealt with the orphanage association for very long, you find that there's a style that the association has and a certain lingo that they use, and it's a lingo that they use because they have found that it works on the constituents. And so when the association begins to do its little dance and move in and around through the constituents, the experience is a familiar one for the constituents, for all of the orphans that live there. It's familiar. And because it's happened so often, and they, each of them, have responded in much the same way over the years to this sort of stimulation. Well, when the stimulation occurs today, there's a conditioned response everyone has. And it's very hard for them to stand there objectively and say, wait a minute, this board of directors of this association are just people like me, and I don't have to listen to them any more than they have to listen to me, and I don't have to get excited because they're excited, and I really could stand here and just listen to what they say and see whether it makes any sense to me and whether I'm interested in supporting it or not. I don't have to climb on the bandwagon just because I've always done it and just because that's the way the constituency relates to the board of directors, historically speaking, you see. I don't have to operate in this mindset. You see, we're talking about, and have been for months, leaving the orphanage, leaving the orphan mindset. So, when you've turned on the radio or the TV or the news, read the newspaper and heard of every fear or pain or trial that's going on that should cause you to be fearful, pained, and tense, you've got to be willing to do the two-step. You've got to be willing to step back and say, wait a minute. No response is called for here. I don't have to bring into play my conditioned response to this whole dance. This whole dance that we do every week before the meeting. Or the same dance we do before every election. I don't have to do this. Reality doesn't operate according to the rules of the orphanage because in reality there are no orphans. So I really need to engage in behavior that isn't patterned. Behavior that isn't ordered by memory, thinking. Every fear or pain or trial you have has been undone. It doesn't matter that the association, board of directors, is saying that there's some new catastrophe that hasn't been undone. Especially when the catastrophe is the same old catastrophe. He, the Holy Spirit, has brought all of them to light, having accepted them instead of you. Meaning that he's accepted them instead of your having accepted them because you didn't accept them. You didn't accept them for the purpose of undoing them. You accepted them for the purpose of magnifying them. You accepted them for the purpose of being able to stand with your fellow orphans and chant, end it, end it, end it now, end it, end it, end it now. And get the thrill of the group activity and the sense of presence when the way to end it is not to stand with orphans chanting, but to walk out the front door of the orphanage. He, the Holy Spirit, has brought all of them, all of the fears, pains, and trials, to light, having accepted them instead of you and recognized they never were. Reality is, in a way, occurring in a different paradigm from the one the pundits and your thinking are reporting. There are no dark lessons he, the Holy Spirit, has not already lightened for you. The lessons you would teach yourselves, such as, oh my God, I'm going to go under. Oh my God, where will I be a year from now? if I lose all of my savings, blah, blah, blah. And the thinking goes on and on and on. But wait a minute. There are no dark lessons He has not already lightened for you. And the lessons you would teach yourselves, He has corrected already. They do not exist in His mind at all. And again, who is this He, the Holy Spirit? That which is nothing more than your right mind. So, they do not exist in your right mind at all. For the past binds Him, you, not, and therefore binds not you. He, the Holy Spirit, does not see time as you do, and each miracle He offers you corrects your use of time and makes it His. Listen to this. He, that which is nothing more than your real or right mind, He who has freed you from the past, would teach you are free of it. Or you say, well, it's not the past I need to get free of now. It's the awful future. Okay. This is where you need to stop yourself dead in your tracks. Past, future, are imaginative concepts that don't represent anything actually. So, the very thought, I need to protect myself against the awful future, that is a debilitating, self-destructive thought which actually has no meaning because it's made out of pure nonsense. But you think it's real and you choose to engage your thinking and rely on it and scare yourself to death with. Hey, stop yourself dead in your tracks, as I said. Catch yourself and abandon that use of your mind. He who has freed you from the past, and I'm going to say from the future as well, would teach you are free of it. He would have you accept His accomplishments as yours, because He did them for you. You get it? It's already done. Not only that, it has already been done by that which is nothing more than your right mind. So it's an act of your very being, which is at this very moment establishing for you your freedom from a so-called past and a so-called future, in which your wholeness is available to you, and in which you do not have to depend upon some intelligent governor or some intelligent monetary system or some intelligent set of laws to make you invulnerable and happy and free. He did them for you. And because He did, they are yours. He has made you free of what you made. And as I've done before, I'm going to add the word up. He has made you free of what you made up. You can deny Him, but you cannot call on Him in vain. You can't call on Him in vain, but you can refrain from calling on Him. Now, I would suggest that before you call on your pundits or on your favorite news channel, you stop dead in your tracks and call on the Holy Spirit. Call on that which is nothing more than your right mind, which isn't deluded, and therefore is making you free in every single moment from ignorance of every sort and the bondage that seems to accompany ignorance. He always gives what he has made in place of you. Meaning, what he has made instead of you. He made it for you because you weren't making anything real. And so he made it in place of your making it. He always gives what he has made in place of you. Your right mind has made your good for you in place of your not having yet made it. Okay. He would establish his bright teaching so firmly in your mind that no dark lessons of guilt can abide in what he has established as holy by his presence. What you divinely are, have established as holy by your presence. Thank God that he is there and works through you, and all his works are yours. He offers you a miracle with every one you let him do through you. So you know what? It would be a good idea for all of you to see yourselves as miracle workers. You're here to be the presence of a sudden shift of perception in which ignorance is no longer governing, so that you might share it with your brothers and sisters, because they have a need not to be frightened, and they have a need not to be fooled into thinking that there's actually an awful future that they have to be afraid of and protect themselves against by being so scared that they can't see clearly. So scared that there isn't enough peace of mind for the love of God to register with them, or their capacity to love their brother and sister to register with them. And so they're distracted from their fulfilling function. Remember, he offers you a miracle with every one you let him do through you. Who on earth, you might say, could be in their right mind under the circumstances? You ask too much of me. You are being unreasonable. No, I'm not. You are capable. You've just forgotten it. And you need to be willing to stand like a lead weight right where you are, without one iota of fear, to start you fleeing from the danger, from the imagined or supposed danger. Without enough gumption to engage in fearful thoughts, fearful imaginations, awful prognostications, all of which prove to you that you're not only vulnerable, but you will be destroyed. I promise you, 1 year from now, 2 years from now, you're still going to be standing there. the end will not have come, and you will have either gone through those 12 or 24 months acting like an idiot and suffering from chaos because you didn't choose for your peace, or you'll say, well, wait a minute. If this isn't the end, and if I'm still going to be here 24 months from now, and if all my capacities and all the intelligence I have isn't going anywhere, I will still be the same capable presence that I've been for the last 10 years, or however long, that I have attributed my present success to. In other words, no matter what apparent drama goes on, my capable self is going to be unchanged. And therefore, I don't have to be afraid for my existence, and I don't have to be afraid for my safety. All I have to do is be willing to look through my peace at whatever the circumstances are that present themselves to me, so that I might listen for the intelligence response that will bless my brother and that will bless me. And that's what I choose to devote myself to, because that's my birthright and that's my function. My function is to be able to look at whatever seems to be going on and remember God there. Remember the truth there. Experience the truth there. And be able to express and embody it. That's my function. I really don't have to indulge in anything else. And you know what? If the pundits want to use me as their subject, and they want to suppose what might be the outcome of what they determine to be foolishness, let them. They're not God. And if they're not willing to look for the truth and would rather stay in the vagueness of suppositions, what they're doing isn't worthy of my attention, and I refuse to give it to them. How are you going to use your mind this week? Are you going to give your attention to that which is unworthy of it? Are you going to let others think for you? Are you going to let them jumpstart your thinking? Or are you going to use this as a truly wonderful occasion to practice what we've been talking about, and just maybe experience a sudden shift of perception, a miracle, a transformation, a transition into being awake? Don't be afraid of this time. Use it for all it's worth to be intelligent. And I look forward to being with you next week, because you know what? No matter what dire thing might happen, you'll still be there, and I'll still be here, and we'll still meet. No matter what happens, it can't change that. That's how safe and secure everything is. I love you. 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 Hang in there in your peace.